diamond is something that people think of as, you know, your invincible stone, because diamond is way harder than any other material. But diamond is created in a manner where it's only got these carbon molecules, and they've just lined up in a very perfect structure. It's called a cubic structure, and they're like a pyramid over a pyramid. What you end up with is a stone that could be very, very, very strong in terms of scratching, and yet it might be very brittle. If you just took a pair of pliers and pinched it when you were trying to set it, you could end up with a chipped diamond. The most desirable diamond is kind of the most perfect example. It has no interesting inclusions. It has no interesting color. It has no interesting variances in how it's cut or anything. In fact, I will look long and hard for some little, what they call natural, some little part of the outside skin of the diamond that was left on there as a sign of the cutter's skill in getting the largest, best stone. And if they leave this little natural on the outside, in the girdle, the widest part, and it's just some little patch that's not visible when you look down on the diamond, not visible from above, doesn't affect the clarity visually, then it doesn't count as a flaw. You can actually have a flawless diamond with a natural on the outside. Ideally, on a flawless diamond, that natural is going to be smooth, and it's just going to look like an extra facet. But it's an extra facet made by nature. And if you examine it closely, it might have little tiny triangles on it. It might have a little tiny orange peel structure or little striae like the outside of a crystal. So that natural on the outside of the diamond is an example that this perfect thing that in some ways looks man-made or synthetic because it's so without any flaws might still have this little natural on the outside, or sometimes the point of the diamond, the culet, instead of being completely pointed or an eight-sided facet, sometimes that's a natural, just a little piece of it. Might have just a tiny, just look like a tiny facet with a tiny triangle on it. People also, they've been a little more lenient with diamonds over the years, but the legal grading system for a diamond from the GIA, which created the diamond grading system, says that if you have a stone that has inclusions that you can see with the naked eye, just looking at it, or if you have inclusions that may or may not be noticeable but cause the stone to be fragile, that it is then classified as an I1, imperfect in the first category. And I1 stones are the most commonly seen stones in the market. I mean, if you go to your, I won't say the name, and you buy diamonds, what you're going to get is I1, I2, or I3. And those stones, by definition, are fragile. They have either ugly, you know, noticeable inclusions, which might make you shy away from them, or they have places that are ready to fall off. And so people shouldn't think of a diamond as invincible or anything like that. It's just the hardest substance, and it isn't the toughest. Jade, which is only a 6.5 in hardness, is way tougher. It's the toughest of the gems. And if you think about garbage dumps in China, what you found in them was jade sculptures that were still beautiful years later, thousands of years later. You know, if you go to any museum of natural history worth its salt, it'll have some wonderful jade carvings because they could survive. They were tough. When you value a gemstone, generally the criteria are rarity, durability, beauty, and then some sort of a history. And in fact, maybe beauty is the most important. That's why we love them. But when we give a price tag to them, the rarity, the durability, the beauty, and that's why diamond is so valuable, because it is extremely durable. That's its very most wonderful category, and that it nothing else scratches it. It's just way, way, way more resistant to scratching, because the only thing that scratches it is a diamond with directional hardness, and you have to find the right angle to abrade or cut or scratch a diamond, but it is extremely durable. It's beautiful because they know how to cut it very symmetrically and therefore return all of the light to your eye. And it's the only stone that, if cut perfectly, with no inclusions inside to disperse the light in a funny direction, diamond can actually return 100% of the white light that enters the stone from the top, the crown of the stone, and reflect it. It bounces across the pavilion, the bottom of the stone, and comes back out. And no other stone comes really close to returning all of the light to your eye. And it does have a history. They have made diamond into jewelry for a long time, because they always knew how to cleave them. So even before they could cut them or cut many other stones, they did recognize that the perfect structure of diamond made it so that you could take this octahedral shape, or maybe the diamond that's in a flat triangular structure or nacre, that you could take those and you could cut them. If you got one of those low flat ones, you might be able to cleave it in just a few ways and get a rose cut. Or if you had a pyramid over a pyramid, the octahedron, you might be able to just cleave it right through the middle, or in later they could slice it right through the middle, and then you end up with two sort of diamond-like diamonds that you can cut a little bit. It is brittle, though. Its ability to be cut was its ability originally to be cleaved, and cleaving is a mixed value in a gemstone, because a stone with perfect cleavage is definitely going to be fragile from some directions. It's not all great. And when they're cutting a diamond, they know how to take the really well-organized directional structure of that stone and crack it really right between two very well-organized parts. And then you have a cleaved stone. I once saw a ring, satin platinum, been worn for 40-something years. The platinum was still fine. Everything else about the diamond was fine. But the way that it had been cut, it had four places where the girdle was really, really thin that were exposed. The rest of it was protected by the prongs and being close to the prong. And so the stone had like a white cross that went down into it, because it had cleaved in four different ways right down the structure of the stone. At the GIA, when they're training gemologists, they definitely talk about how the craziest person is the someone who's testing their diamond. So they take a known diamond and they start scratching their unknown, and once they've scratched all, they go, oh, that's right. Diamond will scratch diamond because it's directional hardness. So it doesn't prove that it's not a diamond because you scratched it with a diamond. That's not going to be. And it doesn't prove it is a diamond because you scratched glass, because sapphire will scratch glass. There's lots of stones. So scratching is a destructive test and you don't do it. But it also has made people think that these stones are invincible. And the Elizabeth Taylor story is one that they tell at the GIA, where she had that 69-carat, flawless, colorless, pear-shaped diamond set in platinum. This was the Taylor-Burton diamond. Was set in a platinum strand of other diamonds. And Elizabeth Taylor knew it was this phenomenally valuable stone. So she kept it in a pouch, and she would put it in first, and she would drop the rest of the necklace in on top of it. And the rest of the necklace caused percussion marks on the diamond, like bruises, indentations where the crystal structure is disturbed. And she had to have the stone recut because it had these percussion marks. The diamond didn't necessarily scratch the other diamond, and platinum wouldn't scratch diamond. It's not as hard. But diamonds can, in fact, suffer from percussion marks. So there's a lot of those things where they're really trying to make you think the diamond is invincible. It isn't. It doesn't scratch. That's what diamond doesn't do. It doesn't scratch with anything other than diamond. The way that they cut diamond is by making use of directional hardness. And they taught us that a person who's actually polishing a diamond is polishing it with diamond. So it's not like the diamond that they're polishing it with is any harder than the diamond they're polishing. But they've learned that there is directional hardness, and it's the structure, how the diamond is formed and which way they're cutting it that tells that. And if you had a diamond, you would want it to have, I believe, something that would tell you that that stone was a natural diamond. Because just in my career, the stones that I originally studied, they said, well, flawless, you know, no problem, because they can't make a flawless, colorless diamond at General Electric. You know, they can only make slightly yellow ones. But they've improved the color and the clarity tremendously. So if it doesn't have a natural inclusion in it, then how are you going to say that it's a natural diamond? If it's flawless and it's colorless and it's cut perfectly and there's no remnants of anything that nature left on it, then you don't have a stone that's worth a fortune. What you have is a stone that you're going to have to convince someone is worth a fortune. And it's much harder if it has a little teeny natural, a little something that a diamond grader can define it as flawless with this identifying characteristic, this natural on the outside, or VVS1, very, 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 or very, very slightly included, which means you can find an inclusion when you turn it upside down under 10 power if you're trained. That's what you want. Or if you really would rather spend a more reasonable amount of money, you want something with some inclusions that you could find under the microscope that were attractive. Maybe a diamond inside a diamond. I love the inclusions that tell you where that stone was. Maybe it's got a little red garnet in it, or a little red spinel, or a piece of green peridot. And you can get those. The inclusions don't all have to be dark black carbon or big white flaws ready to fall apart. And so any of those kinds of inclusions, or a perfect little octahedra, just a nice little diamond crystal floating, or maybe I've seen them where you have an octahedra and then like a comet tail, a whole lot of other little octahedra. Little, you know, these little pyramid-like structures floating off. And you can find that in spinel, too. That's frequently the inclusion in spinel. But sometimes it can be spinel in diamond. First, the spinel grew, and then the diamond grew around it. In your diamond collection, you'd want to have some odd shapes. They call those makels. And they are stones that instead of growing nice and neat as an octahedra or a dodecahedra or any one of these shapes that they can grow that are versions of the same cubic system. Instead, this might be something where the pyramid's tipped and got odd shaped, and then you cut a stone out the inside, or where it's just a perfect triangle, absolutely exactly the same size. Maybe I sold one that was about 8 millimeters on a side, 2 millimeters deep. The whole outside of this triangular shaped stone was covered in triangles, and the whole both surfaces of it, it looked like an ice skating rink that somebody had stamped. Just triangles all over, every size triangle on both surfaces. It looked like a transparent piece of nothing. But if you looked under the microscope, what you had was a very, very durable little piece of triangles on triangles in triangles with triangles.